All right, so here's the question, or here's one. We're going to talk about Rahab today and the spies in Jericho. The first person that comes up to me and tells me the other Rahab of the Bible, I'll buy your lunch, okay? You have to have lunch with me, but I'll buy your lunch, okay? I'll even let you pick. Tell me who the other Rahab is in the Bible. Okay, if I mention the word Exodus to you, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Most likely, if you've been in the church for a little bit of time, or you grew up watching Charlton Heston in the Ten Commandments every Sunday, or every Easter, then you think immediately of the nation of Israel being led out of bondage in Egypt. The Exodus is actually two events playing out at the same time. The first and most obvious is the liberation of Israel from slavery. The second is God dealing with the nation of Egypt whose hearts had been hardened. In that little episode, you have the two great truths of the Bible explained and demonstrated. The first is God's grace, unmerited and undeserved, lavished upon the Jewish people. Not only are they freed from bondage, but while they're in the desert, God provides everything they could possibly need. Food falls from heaven. Water flows unendingly from a dry rock. By day, a pillar of cloud provides shade to mitigate the heat of the desert. And by night, a pillar of fire provides warmth and light for security against their enemies. These pillars also represent the glory of God in their midst, reassuring the people that God is always near and active in their lives. The second great truth is one of judgment. God uses this incident to deal with the nation of Egypt, who was fully idolatrous, immoral, and opposed to his chosen people. Here you see the plagues of Moses used to decimate the economy, the land, the government, the people, and the livestock of Egypt. As the Jewish people move out into the desert en route to the Promised Land, they become the instrument that God uses to work his judgment on the nations they come in contact with. Just prior to this episode in Joshua 2 through 6 that we're going to talk about today, they put the Amorites to destruction, killing everything and everyone. The reasons were the same that we read about later in the Old Testament. Idolatry, sexual immorality, treachery, human sacrifice. But here's the thing. While most people think of the Exodus as only describing that one incident between Egypt and Israel, the Exodus is the theme of the Bible throughout. We see repeatedly an Exodus story played out in the Old Testament and the New Testament. The last book of the Bible is a perfect example of this. In Revelation, we begin with God describing a church, his chosen people, being persecuted, murdered, marginalized, and in bondage to a world that's opposed to God. God's mercy is then described as the revelation of Jesus Christ to the world that frees people from their bondage to sin, only to triumph in the struggle against the oppression of the world, and finally to be delivered to a promised land flowing with milk and honey, a land described as the new heaven and the new earth. In fact, the Christian life should be viewed and understood as a personal exodus, the freeing from the bondage of sin of a person who had prostituted themselves to the world in hopes of finding what can only be found in God. God's mercy is seen in preventing us from getting what we so well deserve, judgment. God's grace is his love and forgiveness, what we don't deserve. His judgment is seen every day as we work to stamp out the old self and conform ourselves to the example of his son. And this is what we see today in the story of Rahab. Rahab is one of only four women contained in the genealogies of Jesus Christ. Like Tamar from last week, she has very little to commend her. In fact, each of the women of the Old Testament who are mentioned in these genealogies are insignificant. They are women who have been used by their culture and the men around them. Tamar was a bride to a man who used her, who was evil, and God chose to kill him. She's then married off to a man who used her only for sexual pleasure and denied her what was rightfully hers. Rahab is a woman who's been marginalized. She supports herself and her family by selling the only thing that she has, herself. She's also in the beginning a non-believer, living a long ways from God. And now, just as things changed for Tamar, we'll see today how they changed for Rahab. Our story begins in Joshua chapter 2, but it starts a little bit before that. If you think back, as the book of Joshua opens up, the nation of Israel is on the verge of actually taking possession of the promised land. 40 years before, they had come to the border when Moses had sent 12 spies into the land to see what was going on and to be sure that Israel could prevail against their enemies. When the 12 spies returned, 10 give reports that it wouldn't be possible to defeat their enemies. They said there were giants in the land. But two of those spies, a much younger Joshua and Caleb, were confident they could prevail. They are so vocal about this that everyone else wants to stone them because they're just afraid of actually having to fight for the promised land. For their failure to trust in him, for their failure to fight when he has given the land, the enemy, into their hands, God leaves them to wander in the desert until all the generation of the people that came out of Egypt are dead. Well, now we've come to the time when Moses has died. The spy who was threatened with death, Joshua, is now God's anointed leader over the nation of Israel. All the tribes have pledged that they will do whatever Joshua says. They've made plans to go into Jericho as the first place in their march to claim the promised land. But before that, you come to chapter 2, verse 1. And Joshua, the son of Nun, sent two men secretly from Shittim as spies, saying, "Go view the land, especially Jericho." Now, you can't imagine that coming from Joshua, it's any accident that they're only sending two spies. I mean, this is a road they've been down before. He sends two unnamed men into the city of Jericho just to see what's going on. When they get to the city of Jericho, the spies end up in the house of a prostitute named Rahab. Now, the first thing you have to wonder is how, out of all the places they could end up, they end up at a brothel. Well, more than likely, it was the equivalent of a hotel or a boarding house at the time. Jericho is a pagan city where just about anything is fair game. Prostitution, idolatry, child sacrifice were all a part of religious worship in Jericho. Now, there have been some who claim that Rahab, she wasn't really a prostitute, she was an innkeeper. And sadly, that's a tactic some try to use to clean up the Old Testament and make the genealogies of Christ look a little bit more appealing. Family trees are great until you start digging in them and you find all those knots that you don't like. The people who want to change Rahab into something other than a prostitute are the ones trying to get rid of the knots they don't like. At this point in time, it would have been perfectly natural for the spies to end up at Rahab's house. While they were trying to be slick about it, though, they get spotted, and the authorities are notified. Verse 2 says, "And it was told to the king of Jericho, 'Behold, men of Israel have come here tonight to search out the land.' Then the king of Jericho sent to Rahab, saying, 'Bring out the men who have come to you, who entered your house, for they have come to search out all the land.'" You see, the king knows where people would go, where strangers would go, if they've come into the city. And he knows the best place to find out information is where people gather. Rahab's house likely has other prostitutes. There's food, there's drink, and all sorts of other things going on. And everybody in here knows that when you have food and drink and other things going on, men tend to talk pretty freely. The king knows everyone in the city. The king knows, everyone in the city knows, the Jewish people are nearby and what they have planned. And they're all on edge. Verse 4, "But the woman had taken the two men and hidden them. And she said, 'True, the men came to me, but I did not know where they were from. And when the gate was about to be closed at dark, the men went out. I do not know where the men went. Pursue them quickly, for you will overtake them.'" Rahab has hidden the men, and then she sends the king's men in the opposite direction. Now, if you read some of the commentaries, the first thing they talk about is the lie that Rahab tells. I don't know if that's, and they talk about that being her pagan nature to lie. I don't know if that was necessarily a bad lie, but I'm not going to beat Rahab up for it. The king's men have no reason not to believe her, though. Everyone is aware that the Jews are different. They're opposed to sexual immorality. They destroy everyone and everything when they defeat an enemy. Their God tells them to do this as an instrument of his judgment. Rahab is a prostitute. The Jews are going to destroy her as well as everybody else. What they don't realize, though, is that God has already started working on Rahab. What they haven't realized or even attempted to understand is that the God whom the Jews follow and worship is one who uses the most unlikely, the most insignificant, the most marginalized to accomplish his will. You see, Rahab had planned ahead. It's obvious she had a plan, even before the spies arrived at her home. You're going to see that she has been hearing about the nation of Israel for quite a few years. God has been quietly, consistently working on Rahab. Before the king's men showed up at Rahab's house, verse 6 tells us, but she had brought them up on the roof and hid them with the stalks of flax that she had laid in order on the roof. So the men pursued after them on the way to the Jordan as far as the fords, and the gate was shut as soon as the pursuers had gone out. Rahab had put the spies up on the roof of her home. They were hidden among these bales of flax. Now, the fact that there are bales of flax on the roof speaks a little bit to her and what was going on in her life at this point. Flax is a crop that is used for food and textiles. If you have linen sheets or clothes made from linen, they originally came from flax. You get the idea that Rahab is not just a prostitute. She's engaged in some kind of work to help her family. And her family is mentioned later, and they'll probably help her. It gives the impression of someone, though, not content with where they are, but someone who's working to improve their life. So anyway, she's hidden the spies on the roof. In the meantime, the king's men have left the city in what they thought was a hot pursuit of the spies. Once they are through the city gates, the gates close for the night. You see, Jericho at this time is possibly the most defended and fortified city in the known world. They had a double wall surrounding their city. It was maybe 40, 50 feet in between the walls. And you have one or two sets of gates that close it off. So as soon as the sun goes down, the gates get shut. Nobody comes in or goes out until morning. After the gates are locked for the night, Rahab returns to the roof. Verse 8, before the men lay down, she came up on the roof and said to the men, I know that the Lord has given you the land, that the fear of you has fallen upon us, and then all the inhabitants of the land melt away before you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea before you when you came out of Egypt, and what you did to the two kings of the Amorites who were beyond the Jordan, to Sihon and Og, whom you devoted to destruction. And as soon as we heard it, our hearts melted, and there was no spirit left in any man because of you. For the Lord your God, he is God in the heavens above and on the earth beneath. I know the Lord has given you the land. In these three verses, Rahab tells the spies she knows that God has given them the victory before it even starts. She explains why she knows this and why she's now a believer in the God of Israel. It is an explanation as well as a confession of faith for Rahab. It recounts the Jews' exodus from Egypt, the crossing of the Red Sea, the defeat of the Amorite kings. Those are all contained in the book of Numbers. This was all years before. And it's like the people of Jericho have been sitting there and waiting for the day the Jews came to defeat them. Their hearts have melted. The fear of them has fallen on all of Jericho. They had no spirit or will to fight them. She ends this little explanation with a simple phrase, I know the Lord has given you the land. Or try this, I know the Lord and he has given you the land. Verse 12 then says, now, or because of everything I have said, please swear to me by the Lord that as I have dealt kindly with you, you also will deal kindly with my father's house and give me a sure sign that you will save alive my father and my mother, my brothers and sisters and all who belong to them and deliver our lives from death. Did you catch it? If you think back to last week, did you catch the word? She says, hey, I helped you, now you help me. But don't just say it, give me a sure sign. In other words, give me a pledge, a deposit, hope. Do you remember the word Erebon? It's a different form of the word, but it means essentially the same thing as the pledge made to Tamar by Judah. Rahab is trying to save all those whom she cares for, and she wants a promise or an oath from the spies. For their part, the men said to her in verse 14, our life for yours even to death. If you do not tell this business of ours, then when the Lord gives us a land, we will deal kindly and faithfully with you. What else are they going to say? I mean, she holds all the cards. Rahab, all she has to do is make noise, and the spies are through. So they agree with her. You get to verse 15. Then she let them down by a rope through the window, for her house was built into the city wall, so that she lived in the wall. You get here an idea of where she lived. Remember I said the city has a double wall built around it? Between the walls, they would have dumped all the rubble and trash and everything possible to make it difficult on an invading army. The marginalized ones were the ones who lived in the wall. They were seen as so much human rubble to be sacrificed to save the special people. Rahab's house was in the space between the walls, but also it gave her a window that looked outside the city. With a rope, this gave the spies the perfect avenue of escape. But I want you to remember the window in the wall. I want you to think of it as a doorway for the spies, and you'll understand this in a few minutes. Verse 16, and she said to them, go into the hills or the pursuers will encounter you, and hide there 3 days until the pursuers have returned. Then afterward, you may go your way. The men said to her, we will be guiltless with respect to this oath of yours that you have made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, you shall tie this scarlet cord in the window through which you let us down, and you shall gather into your house your father and your mother, your brothers, and all your father's household. Then if anything goes out of the doors of your house into the street, this blood shall be on his own head, and we shall be guiltless. But if a hand is laid on anyone who is with you in the house, his blood shall be on our head. But if you tell this business of ours, then we shall be guiltless with respect to your oath that you made us swear. Remember, I talked about the Exodus from Egypt. What was the last plague that was sent upon the Egyptians? The death of the firstborn during the Passover. How did the Jews survive the Passover? By putting lamb's blood on the doorposts of their homes and staying inside their homes. The same thing is happening here for Rahab's family. The spies give her a cord to tie in her window. Do you remember the cord in the story of Tamar? Now we have another cord. I don't think it represents the same thing, but it's something similar. They have each made an oath to the other. Rahab, by hiding and helping the spies and then confessing her faith in the God of Israel. The spies, by promising to spare her and her family's life during the battle. Here is what I want you to see. That cord represents this oath. The cord is made up of three strands. A three-strand cord or rope is the strongest and most manageable. One strand represents the spies' oath. One strand represents Rahab's oath and confession. The third strand represents God's part in all of this. Verse 21, and she said, according to your words, so be it. Then she sent them away, and they departed, and she tied the scarlet cord in the window. So the spies get away, Rahab has the red cord, and God is fulfilling his plan. Verse 22, they departed and went into the hills and remained there 3 days until the pursuers returned. And the pursuers searched out all along the way and found nothing. Then the two men returned. They came down from the hills and passed over and came to Joshua, the son of Nun. And they told him all that had happened to them. And they said to Joshua, truly the Lord has given all the land into our hands. And also all the inhabitants of the land melt away because of us. So that's the end of chapter 2. And you have to go all the way to chapter 6 to really know how it all turns out. Finally, Israel is prepared to fight in Jericho. And they have this odd thing they have to do, walking, marching around the city, blowing horns and all of that. But they do this for 6 days. And then they go back to their camp at the end of the day. Then day 7, they march, they blow the horns and yell, and the walls of Jericho fall down. This brings us to Joshua chapter 6, verse 24. And they burned the city with fire and everything in it. Only the silver and gold and the vessels of bronze and of iron they put into the treasury of the house of the Lord. But Rahab the prostitute and her father's household and all who belonged to her, Joshua saved alive. And she has lived in Israel to this day because she hid the messengers whom Joshua sent to spy out Jericho. Rahab is only one of two women mentioned in the book of Hebrews chapter 11. This chapter lists all these heroes of the faith. Hebrews 11:31 says, by faith Rahab, the prostitute, did not perish with those who were disobedient because she had given a friendly welcome to the spies. Rahab survived and was saved because of her faith and what her faith caused her to do. Her faith drove her to hide the spies. James 2:24 and 25 continues this thought. You see that a person is justified by works and not by faith alone. And in the same way, was not also Rahab the prostitute justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out by another way? Faith leads Rahab to help the spies. Her faith leads her to works. Her faith leads her and her family to being saved from God's judgment. Now, having said all of that, here's my question for you. Did the spies have to go into the city of Jericho? Granted, the nation of Israel had to fight and defeat the city of Jericho. That was part of God's plan. By giving a city into the hands of Joshua and his people, God is fulfilling what he had told Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and Moses and all the rest, that they would be a great nation. This was the next step in that process. But also the nation of Israel is now the instrument of God's judgment, working his will on the nations who were surrounding Israel. Did the spies have to know what was inside the walls to fight their battle? No. So why waste the time? Why send two spies into the city when you know if they're caught, they're not going to survive? I would argue that God didn't care one whit what was inside those gates. He already knew. Even what the spies learned was nothing new. They knew Jericho was ripe for defeat before they even went into the city. They don't have to be there. But God had a purpose for them being inside the gates. He knew they were going to bring the walls down. He even tells Joshua, I have given all your enemies into your hand. There is absolutely no reason for the spies to go into the city of Jericho, except for this, Rahab. Do you remember when Abraham knew God was preparing to destroy Sodom? He prayed to God and asked him to spare the city if he found 50 people of faith. He asked him to spare the city if he found 30 people of faith. In fact, he asked him to spare the city if he found 5 people of faith in all the city of Sodom. Well, there was only one of faith in Sodom, and that was Lot. Lot showed kindness to the visitors in his house. It was Lot and his family who were spared out of all of Sodom. Likewise, Rahab showed kindness to the visitors to her house. It is her and her family who are spared out of all of Jericho. Even today, if you go to the Middle East and you're a guest in someone's house, they will die, and everyone in their family will die before they allow something to happen to you. Even if they hate you, if you're invited into their house, it's their responsibility to treat you well. Hospitality is a serious thing in the Middle East. For Lot, it was a matter of faith to protect his guests. For Rahab, it was a matter of faith to protect her guests. But it was more. In John's Gospel, you see Jesus describe himself as the good shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep. In fact, he is the good shepherd who, if he has 100 sheep, leaves 99 alone to go and find the one lost sheep. I would argue the reason the spies had to go into the city was because Rahab, the harlot, was there. This whole episode is about demonstrating that God is one of mercy and grace and judgment. Perfect love, and perfect justice. Rahab was a victim of the culture she was born into. But Rahab, in her profession, had heard of this God of the Jews who picked out small, insignificant, and powerless people from all the nations of the world and pulled them out of bondage, disciplined them, and prepared them in the desert to come into the promised land of their salvation. Rahab knew because of what God had done in her heart that the God of Israel was the God of the heavens above and the earth below. It is Rahab, this woman who had no righteousness of her own, who had nothing to recommend her, this woman who had been used and manipulated by the world and was now living on the edge of society. She is a demonstration of God's grace in that as a sinner, she deserved the same judgment that would destroy Jericho. She deserved the same judgment that each and every one of us deserves. But God's grace gives us instead what we don't deserve, salvation. You see, Rahab represents each and every one of us in our own little personal exodus from the bondage of sin to the promise of God's salvation. Pray with me. Father, thank you for today, and thank you for the story of Rahab and the story of all those who are marginalized and insignificant in the Bible, who you turn into something useful and something to be cherished. We ask that you would work on our hearts and that we could worship you fully without any of the hang-ups from the culture, without the competing interests that are in our hearts. we see that you would be, that our lives are only complete when we put you in front. And that we would reach out to those who are lost and share your good news with them, that they might feel the same peace in their life. All this we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.